Welcome back, everyone. My name is Kaz.
This is Medibot.
And this is episode 80 of the Skulls Cast, wherein we're going to clear up the cards that we were supposed to have reviewed already.
A bit of a logistical misunderstanding.
Right, because you see, there are...
Nonsense.
There are extra cards in Khans of Tarkir that have multicolor to them, so they didn't get swept up in our single color other segment. But they also do not have any watermark on them, so they didn't get covered in our main segments.
Discussing the teams.
So we've brought you other, and now we bring you more.
Yes. There's an amount more that we are bringing you right now. So let's go just in order of weight, starting at the lightest, which is Winterflame. One, a blue and a red for an instant. Choose one or both. Tap target creature. And Winterflame deals 2 damage to target creature.
This is kind of a disappointing spell. One, because it slots right into Jeskai, which I love.
Yes.
And it underperforms.
Mmm.
Basically because you want shock.
Yeah.
And 3 mana is a lot to pay for
3
shock.
3 mana is quite a bit for shock. It can also, you know, get that one irritating blocker that's a little too tall.
Right. So, I mean, the ideal scenario for Winterflame is tap big man, shoot little man, and attack through with your pumped up Jeskai team.
Yes. That is the optimal Winterflame situation.
And that basically never happens. It's pretty dang rare.
in my experience, this is 3 mana for shock a lot of the days of the week.
And given that we do not have shock in this, like Arc Lightning, for instance,
that's
a sorcery.
Nuts,
Arc Lightning is great, but it's a sorcery, and I guess to that end, Winterflame can work.
Mm.
So I don't think that this would be a strong pull into either of these colors, but if you're already one, then I would consider it and lean into the other, just for that, in like picks. It's really not going to do anything outside of limited.
No, it just is not efficient enough.
It looks kind of cool. You know, you have this like orangey red burst on one side.
I can't make heads or tails of it.
On the other. And there's this tiny little guy.
Yeah, scale dinosaur.
Sort of looking at it. I thought that was a guy with an axe.
I see like a dinosaur and that's its head on the left and its tail in the top right.
Speaking of Winterflame, I'm gonna turn off the air. You tell them about Ride Down.
Alright, let's talk about the Ride Down. Come on down. For a red and a white, for an instant, that says, destroy target blocking creature. Creatures that were blocked by that creature this combat gain trample until end of turn. So, here's a much better answer to, hey, there's a pesky tall blocker. You stomp on it with your horse.
And he really does have to block, but there's a... This is a pretty dang good
blocking
spell.
Blocking does happen in Khans Limited. Yeah. It does.
This is an excellent Jeskai instant.
Oh, yes.
And, it's great.
Really?
Basically.
Any deck that wants to be swinging with its team every turn can probably get some kind of value out of this unless you're in that just straight hard race.
Right. It frequently gets to sit around in your hand. And that's just fine, because when you need it to work, it does, and then you get all the damage in,
right.
Because
when
your guy
you need it to work,
suddenly tramples.
For 2 mana, you kill the guy and get your damage through.
Right, and so that's, like, mana enough for this, and then also flipping up your guy and doing whatever else. So it's like, I have 5 mana, I turn up Mystic of the Hidden Way, I attack with everybody, I ride somebody down. That's realistic.
Yeah. That's a good turn.
It's a pretty dang good turn.
Mystic of the Hidden Way. Maybe just put that guy in your deck.
I like Mystic of the Hidden Way a lot. I like Ride Down just fine. You won't see it. It's not going to come around because it's so good.
Yeah.
So if you're already in one or both colors, I would definitely pick it.
First pickable?
I think it's first pickable. I think this is a pretty damn strong removal spell, and we don't have like cheap removal in this in this format. Yeah. There's just no such thing. Like, our cheap removal kills little guys, but once you're at, like, a kill anything level, you're really at, like, three.
Yeah, at least.
Right. And then the anything we're talking about is, like, an attacking creature or whatever. Because we have that. And then, well, okay, we have Murderous Cut, which is just way above the curve for... like, below the curve? Above the quality curve.
Yeah.
for how much you pay for it.
Curved.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of things that are curved, let's look at our next code. Secret Plans! Which is a green and a blue mana for an enchantment that does nothing. I mean...
Yeah.
Face down creatures you control get +0/+1, and whenever a permanent you control is turned face up, draw a card.
I've seen this a number of times in a gimmick deck. It, for one, requires that you turn something face up before it even replaces itself, and for another, could just have been the creature that you were trying to squeeze in anyway. And while morphs are kind of cool, a deck full of them ends up with a bunch of Grey Ogres most of the time, and there are a lot better creatures than Grey Ogres. And so the problem is, you either have the Secret Plans and you wish it was a creature, or you don't have the Secret Plans and all your creatures are bad.
Yeah, and you really wish you had those plans.
And that's the deck.
You think that there's no, like, that the chance of hitting the sweet spot, as it were, with Secret Plans is just too low?
I think so. Like, the only time I've seen...
Turn 3, a morph. Turn 4, whatever. Well, don't care.
Ideally, it would be something like, turn 3, a morph, it's Teemer Charger, I flip it up anyway, because I reveal another morph, another Teemer Charger, who knows. Then you have replaced the Secret Plans, and your Teemer Charger is still just a Teemer Charger.
Yeah, 3-1.
Yeah.
Could be worse. It's cute, and I love it because it's an enchantment with blue in its cost that doesn't do anything.
It is this tiger staring out of frame at you.
Yes, this tiger casting some kind of powerful magic.
He's not quite looking at you. He's doing
Rakshasa.
He's doing the, like, stare in opposite directions kind of thing, like when your eyes kind of roll back in your head, but instead they go in opposite directions because you're laughing maniacally. I think that's what's going on here. I will give an honorable mention to the deck that has multiple Secret Plans.
Yeah, if you get two in your deck, then you've moved out of cute and into okay.
Oh, geez.
Strokes chin.
Jeez.
So if you're getting actually up on cards every time you morph, then it's like quality schmality, you know?
Yeah, that's... It's pretty dang surprising. Like,
I'll play my 3-mana Pillowfield Ox that gets better. That draws me 2 cards when I flip it.
Flip it into a 5/5 or whatever it is.
All right. Speaking of the number 5.
Hey.
Our next card is Master the Way. 3, a blue and a red for a sorcery. Draw a card. Master the Way deals damage to target creature or player equal to the number of cards in your hand.
I rather like it.
I don't.
Okay.
You go first.
All right, as a 5-mana sorcery in red, this has the versatility of being able to kill a creature or a player, and because of how it works, it's never ambiguous as to, like, how much damage you're going to get. You just look at your hand, count the cards there, that's the damage you're getting out of the spell. So that's partially, I think, why it works the way it does, how it says, like, draw a card first. Because most cards that... cantrip do so after their effect, but because this happens before, it works more simply and more directly than...
Right, you count, you say, I have 5 cards in hand, I'm about to cast Master the Way,
right.
This will do 5 damage.
Right. And it just gets them. Yeah. It's a reason to sandbag lands in Limited, in case you wanna. And Jeskai is great, and this as a way to, like, cast a spell without going down on cards and get some effect out of it and pump your entire team is the kind of thing that the Jeskai deck wants to be doing more than other things. So it slots right into that and it's a pretty decent removal. So that's why I kind of like it.
That's why I don't like it.
Okay.
It's because I feel like this will only feel good if I already have, like, somehow I have, like, four prowess dudes out, and I also still have four cards in my hand.
You don't need, like, four. You need, like, two to make this great, and one makes it okay.
Deal one damage?
I think on its own, it works. It doesn't need you to have any guys, and it gets better with those guys.
I feel like I'm overpaying for it.
Okay,
fine. Like, unless I'm dealing four damage with it, in which case, what the, like, either I'm been drawing so many cards that I can't lose, or have I not been casting anything all game?
I think you're missing the point that it kills a creature. You're paying mana to kill a creature. You get a 0/1 out of this card without any other moving parts, without, okay, yes, you need to have, like, cards in your hand.
Right. I guess because in... Here's what I want to do in Cons of Tarkir Limited.
Okay, then you go ahead and play that deck and never play this card. All that's right. Totally okay.
Okay, so...
In case you missed it, Medibot made the vomiting...
vomiting hands onto table. Vomiting hands. Enjoy table, my seven Mardu Skull Hunters. you're dead now.
And that's...
No, I recognize that this card is probably okay, and it's just sort of a mismatch of play style. It's not doing what I want to be doing, but it probably does what it's trying to be doing all right. Like you said, because it replaces itself, if, like, 5 mana kill a 2/2 draw a card, when you put it that way, like, I'd maybe play it.
That's still not bad.
Yeah.
And the great...
I might be being hard on
the excellent part is that when you just need that extra bit of reach, there it is. Oh no, my opponent's at 3. Time to master the way. Yeah. And that can... So it can serve that purpose too.
Yeah. Next card is... Man, are we going to disagree about this one too?
I don't know.
Next card is Kintree Invocation. Black and a green for a sorcery. Put an XX black and green spirit warrior creature token onto the battlefield where X is the greatest toughness among creatures you control. I love it.
All right, I'm gonna go first.
Okay.
I half love it.
Okay.
Okay, so we got that for it, at least. The ideal Kintree Invocation turn is 2 after you've turn 1 cast the...
Disowned Ancestor.
Disowned Ancestor.
Yeah, and then you're like...
That's definitely doable for one, and for another, it doesn't require you to play, like, awful things, because Disowned Ancestor is already
what
good.
You want to be playing if your deck, like, has swamps in it.
Really. He blocks all of the 2/1s and 2/2s. He
blocks everything in the format.
He does, and he starts turn 1, and then he can get better. Like, you outlast him once, and then they can't attack with any other 2/1s, and it's kind of embarrassing.
Mm.
But then, later on, this will be even better-er because you'll have other huge toughness things. There's a lot of toughness kicking around the format, like a lot of O5s and O6s, just sort of incidentally in places. And then, like, with any given Outlast deck, you start with, like, Salt Road Patrol or something.
Yeah, because this is in both Abzan and Sultai colors, both of which do not have problems putting large amounts of toughness onto the battlefield.
Yeah, Sultai almost has, like, a fake toughness-loving mechanic to it with the crocodile and the Sultai flare.
Yeah.
Now, the half that I mean is that this doesn't just fit into every deck that has a green and a black to cast it, where you absolutely need something realistic to support it. Or else it's just going to whiff all the time. Like, if you're the Teemer Charger Haven deck, and you have a bunch of morphs, and your first 5 toughness guy comes down when you unmorph your guy at 5, this spell is pretty pathetic. And will often feel like just a blank card, like you mulliganed away more than you actually did. And you can't just stuff a bunch of them in your deck. Unless, again, you have, like, 3 Disowned Ancestors.
I guess it's like, I love it because I would be very happy to play the the Abzan deck that's like, yeah, turn one, disowned ancestor, turn two, this, turn three, hit my perfect monoplanes. Yeah.
Well, the fortunate part about that is that this is not just a, like, slam it, pickable card, so you'll probably get it a little later.
Yeah.
I honestly think I would definitely pick disowned ancestor above this. Just in the abstract.
All other things being equal, right. Yes, I pick ancestor above
like,
this.
First pack, first pick. There's Disowned Ancestor, Kintree Invocation, and a bunch of blanks, like the Ugin's Nexus or whatever. Also, like Winterflame, too, that's not a consideration next to this.
Right, because the Ancestor starts your deck. Mm-hmm. Invocation pushes
Invocation it. Makes it exciting.
Yeah.
And for that, I'll give you a chit. So maybe 51%. You don't like chits?
I'm going to have to wash that off right after we finish.
Well, you can have a bunch of them then. I got a big whole. I have a big container of them.
Don't!
It's right over here.
Keep that sealed. It's gonna smell up the place.
Fine, it is not.
All right. Speaking of smelling up the place, our next card is Mindswipe. X a blue and a red for an instant. Counter target spell unless its controller pays X. Mindswipe deals X damage to that spell's controller.
I'm really on the fence about this one, I'm going to be honest. I like the... Or rather... Like, I never play Cancel. Like, I've picked Cancel a bunch just sort of to, like, say, oh, I'm rounding out the deck, and then I never play it.
Right.
Because it's never what I want. And I, like, being able to leave mana open doesn't happen all that much. Like, there's not a lot of... Okay, the whole, like, counterspell thing is you leave your mana open... And then, end of their turn, you can do whatever. And in the meantime, you can hold mana up to counter things. And that's fine. In cons, you need to play creatures a bunch.
Yeah, you want to
spend your mana.
Be spending your mana doing one of your main phases.
And so Mindswipe comes in on turn 11 or whatever.
Right.
And counters their... Who even knows what it is, because they're casting the morph that they just pulled off the top of their deck. And then you're tapping them out, and they get their spell anyway because they also have unlimited mana, and... you kill them because that's, like, enough.
Right.
Like,
I guess
a blaze that costs one more at that point.
That's actually the comparison I was going to make. It's a blaze that you have to wait for them to cast a spell for you to cast.
Right.
Instead of just being, like, top deck. Aha! You're a flame.
That said, this can be completely backbreaking as well.
Oh, yeah.
So like, I can't...
Because very often decks will, you know, respectively get huge amounts of mana... Sometimes you will get to counter their bomb and bring them for four at the same time.
Or you might even, on your attack, get to counter their feat of resistance targeting their guy, because feat of resistance is great. And then they take a bunch more damage and suddenly are dead from the attack because of bad blocks or secretly bad blocks or just taking a bunch of extra damage or who knows. So the card can...
I am not above... I love to cast Blaze in Limited... Because, first of all, it's a nice, snappy, one-syllable spell.
Mm-hmm.
Blaze.
Well, the other reason you like to do it is because you can say, I blaze your man, and then it dies. Mindswipe can't do that.
Yeah.
I guess it can take out a Planeswalker.
I am making the Kermit.
Yeah, that...
Yeah, that's the other thing. Well, except I always love to, like, kill players with Blaze. Like, 10, blaze you out. Blow!
Yeah.
This has gone on long
enough.
Hopefully
they're still in a place where they need to cast spells.
Yeah.
Because often they just won't. You know, if they're ahead on board, they're beating you down a little bit every turn. Why bother, you know?
Yeah, that's where that whole counter target spell gotcha.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, here's a spell that will have no shortage of targets.
Oh, yeah.
Utter End. 2, a white and a black, instant, exile target, non-land permanent.
Right, so this is clearly bonkers.
This is...
a very high pick.
I believe... Hold on. Let me check my notebook here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Okay. Primo Bonkers Removal.
Yes, I think that's the right... space in the Rolodex for where this fits. Pick this highly. Be in these colors.
This is constructed playable.
Definitely.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
because
it says
exile target non-land permanent at instant speed on it.
Right.
which is delicious.
Like, 4 is not too much for that, yeah. Even in, like, the
even in
streamlined formats that we get in Constructed.
It answers enough different questions that you're okay at that cost. And that's in Limited, oh my god, slam first pick. I beat your bomb by deleting it. I deleted it. Okay, we can fight now.
Yeah, I don't care if it's the Planeswalker that you got or whatever. I don't care if it's indestructible. It's gone. Oh, speaking of indestructibility, one thing I forgot to mention about Ride Down. This is a somewhat famous play in, if you've been watching me play Cons Limited, is that Ride Down once failed for reasons that I still don't understand. My opponent was attacking with Zergo Helm Smasher. He was like an 8-3 at the time or whatever. And I block with Kintree Warden. I regenerate Kintree Warden. Or rather, like, my opponent casts Ride Down on my Kintree Warden because he wants to kill me with the trample damage. And I regenerate Kintree Warden because I have nothing else to do with my mod.
Oh, why not?
Right. The Ride Down destroys Kintree Warden, which replaces it with, being not destroyed and instead removing all damage from it, removing it from combat and tapping it.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, Zergo fails to get trample. I've talked to a bunch of people. I thought he should. I talked to a bunch of people. They think he should. I talked to judges. They say he should. So, MTGO.
MTGO is not about having bugs.
Right. So be mindful of writing down things that can regenerate on Magic the Gathering Online, I guess what I'm saying. We were talking about Utter End, and it's powerful.
Yeah, it's kind of straightforward in how good it is, so there's really not too much to say.
Yeah, I can't really make a case against it in any way, so why bother?
All right. Well, here's something that it doesn't work on.
Hey!
There you go. It's Sagu Mauler. 4 green and a blue for a 6/6 beast with trample and hexproof. Morph it for 3 a green and a blue.
Yeah.
So here's a Sagu Land Swallower.
Right. This guy is invincible.
Please pick this card.
I think that this is the best first pick in the format.
Only 2 colors.
It is only 2 colors.
Basically unkillable.
It's the biggest bomb. He evades with trample. He can't be targeted. He has 6 toughness. So there's no, like, sweeping kind of thing. Like, you need to have a Death Touch creature or something to deal with this.
You need to have something that wins combat.
Right.
Like,
and he's
really
still
well.
And the other atrocious thing, he's still morphed for just 5.
Right.
This is as low as his morph cost can be.
This can be pointed at you, tapped and attacking on turn 4 if they're like, but like on
right.
5 in a lot of cases. This is why you remove morphs aggressively, is because one of them is the Sagu Mauler. He has cool horns. I like the horns.
Yeah, I don't know what he's mauling. Trees, I suppose.
Yeah, the first course is a salad.
Oh, I guess he's getting to the fleshy, meaty main course.
Oh, yeah.
That's you. You were the opponent. You're getting attacked by Sagu Mauler.
You're being attacked by my Sagu Mauler to clear blocks.
He's also straightforwardly powerful and good.
Yeah, just efficient, beady, hard to remove.
This is about as condensed as the creature that is cheap, large, and unkillable with no drawbacks can be.
Yeah. You know, my comparison to a Simic Sky Swallower.
Yeah.
Being
that's pretty apt.
Pretty. Feels a lot like it. It feels about as good casting. Ogle Blag. Next up is Deflecting Palm. Red and a white for an instant. The next time a source of your choice would deal damage to you this turn, prevent that damage. If damage is prevented this way, Deflecting Palm deals that much damage to that source's controller.
Most of the time this just works. This is reverse damage by another name, more or less. It's hard to evaluate frankly. I'm going to go ahead and say that. Because it's not... You can't, like, pick your moment for this. It is definitely a reactive card. Where in the deck or decks that you would play it in, you would usually want to be proactive about that. Be like, okay, I am attacking. Now I want my prowess to trigger or what have you. And that's where, like, Ride Down looks a lot better than this. But it can also be surprise you lose.
Yes.
Like, instead of winning, you lose. And that's a powerful ability and quite a shock. Like, they mind swipe you.
Does have a lot of good surprise value.
You deflect it. Yeah. You're like, well, my spell's gone, but...
So are
now,
you.
Now you're dying instead of me.
It's got a very dismissive-looking person.
Yeah, whatever.
Saying, talk to the hand.
And then this, like, fist. It's, orc yeah, fist. Like, orc fist is those bones popping out of it.
Oh, nasty.
It's a nasty...
I didn't see those as bones. Yeah. I thought, like, oh, yeah, the orc's
knuckles.
Got, like, rings on, right?
Nope.
You
know, nope,
that's,
those are...
That is bones.
That is the bones.
That is the bones. Speaking of the bones, let's move on to our second-to-last card.
Oh, yeah. We're going to spend some time on this guy.
All right. Because this is a planeswalker.
Hey.
Which planeswalker? Well, I'll tell you. Thanks for asking. It's Sorin, Solemn Visitor. 2W&A for the planeswalker named Sorin. Starts with 4 loyalty. He's got 3 abilities. +1. Until your next turn, creatures you control gain +1/+0 and gain lifelink. For -2, put a 2/2 vampire creature token with flying onto the battlefield. And for -6, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, that player sacrifices a creature.
Right, well, he's definitely a limited bomb.
Oh, yes.
Coming
as
in
at, most planeswalkers
at
tend
4
to be.
Mana in a 2-player format, he's going to be able to take control of the game basically on his own in a lot of situations. He can protect himself by making a little blocker. He can immediately get you a bunch of damage. So if you're like, I have some creatures, cast Sorin, prowess triggers, they get +1/+1 lifelink too.
Declare
hooray! Like, it's just, he's a very straightforward planeswalker to play.
Right.
Where a lot of walkers, it's like ambiguous as to maybe what am I supposed to do with this after I play it. Yeah.
Importantly, with this +1, that's an until your next turn. So if you're in certain awkward situations, you could +1 and not attack and be like, I dare you to come at
you
me and give
still,
me a bunch of life.
That is really weird as a... I just... Man.
Well, it also ticks him up closer to the ultimate, relevantly.
Sure.
So, you know,
I never...
I make your attacks look bad, and I am closer to having this sick, nasty...
I never evaluate them with the ultimate in mind.
He starts close to it, is
he
why
does,
I bother thinking about that.
So it's like 1, 2, 3 is a usual like cadence for planeswalker ults. What I don't like about Sorin, Solemn Visitor is that he's like self-plagiarism almost. Like, just give us Sorin, Lord of Innistrad again.
Yeah, he feels a lot like... Like, oh, I guess we get a white-black Sorin in
right.
the set.
There's
that's
like,
who he is
there,
now.
There's
he
the evolution
up.
Of a character, but then there's also just the same dang guy again.
Yeah.
And I frankly look at this and say, why bother? He's not different enough from the other Sorin for me to look at him and say, ah, he's grown as a person. He hasn't grown as anything. He's
a
4-mana, 4 loyalty.
In the timeline happens... Before Innistrad block? I don't know.
Yeah,
Who knows? Sorin is an old walker, or at least a long-lived walker, so...
That's something I should maybe read for the Skulls cast sometime, is a little fiction that I wrote.
Sorin, by virtue of not really ruining anything ever, is probably one of the smartest planeswalkers in existence.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Planeswalkers as a unit are kind of dumb, and he's neutral, which makes him, like, the foremost among equals.
I mean, on his home plane of Innistrad, he's like, well, shit's gonna suck for humans, but let's make it at least, like, kind of fair. Bam, Avacyn exists. Okay, bye. And he leaves, and for, like, a while, that's fine. Basically, his plans at least work for a while.
Yeah.
Whereas everyone else's plan just, like, immediately blows up in their face. Yeah, he's like, here, I'm gonna seal the Eldrazi. Bam, and then they're good for, like...
For a while.
A few hundred... Yeah, long enough for them to become alternate deities and stuff.
Yeah, for knowledge about them to fade into myth. Them to
fade into myth. So, you know what? Look, all processes have a time to failure, Cass.
But
I definitely do agree with you that it does kind of... he feels a lot like Soren Lord of Innistrad in a lot of ways. And that's kind of... I guess, you know... Story-wise, all those, like, him being here and doing things, fine, okay. But, like, he also needs to be mechanically something because this is a card game. For children.
A children's card game.
All right. Our last card in this children's card game...
Oh, yeah.
...is Sarkon, the Dragon Speaker, who costs 3 and double red mana for the Planeswalker Sarkon, and he starts you at 4 loyalty. It's +1, says, until end of turn, Sarkon, the Dragon Speaker, becomes a legendary 4/4 red dragon creature with flying, indestructible, and haste. And just as a reminder, he does not lose loyalty when he isn't a planeswalker.
Ooh.
-1. Sarkon...
That's -3, mate.
That's
pretty important.
Okay, yeah, -1 would be good for that. -3. The 3 is so small. -3. Sarkon, the Dragon Speaker, deals 4 damage to target creature. Just Hadouken a jerk. And -6... you get an emblem with, at the beginning of your draw step, draw 2 additional cards, and at the beginning of your end step, discard your hand.
Right. Well, this guy is also a limited bomb.
Yes.
In a one-on-one format.
Stormbreath Dragon.
Yeah.
Does a fair impression of that other dragon that red decks have been using to win for the last year.
So, 4/4 hasty, flying, indestructible thinger, with 5 loyalty on it, I guess, at that point.
Yeah.
Or he just shows up and Hadouken's a guy.
Yeah, maybe I play 5 mana, kill your guy, gain some life.
Yeah.
You know, this is sort of like, minus immediately gets killed. Okay, sure, I killed one of your guys. The emblem...
The emblem doesn't do anything.
The emblem, I love it so much because there's a card that was in blue, but I think is at least as, if not more fine in red, called Heightened Awareness. Which rings a little bit like this. Heightened Awareness was in a blue enchantment that when it enters the battlefield, discard your hand. And then at the beginning of your draw step, draw a card.
Okay.
So, this is, you know, a little differently. This is the, you know, I guess the red version of that effect. Right,
you spend them if you got them.
Yeah. So you get to draw 3, make them count during your turn. It does mean that you have to, you can't do, you know, fun instant reaction. Your ride down starts to look bad. Well, no, ride down looks fine. Deflecting palm
Deflecting palm looks pretty dang bad. But at that point, you don't care. Honestly,
I really don't think, you know, as much as I do love Planeswalker Ultimates, here's what I also love, attacking with a 4/4 flying indestructible every turn. Solve me, I dare you.
I mean,
his +1 is so good.
His +1 is better than both of his other abilities put together.
Pound for pound, yes.
He'll just keep doing that again and again.
Because a 5 mana 4/4 flying indestructible, just like print, like legendary creature, 5 mana 4/4 flying indestructible haste would be a very fast include in many decks.
So yeah,
Planeswalkers are limited bombs also, I guess.
Very straightforward to play. I imagine he could grow out of the box. He could do other things. Again, because of the versatility. You're either, you know, this is your biggest thing and you're just topping out and chiseling away the last 2 points on the player, or you can get a more control finisher kind of vibe out of him because of how inviolable he is and how he instantly flame tongue Kavu gets a guy when he, when not like instantly, but I mean like when he arrives.
Yeah.
And just
your opponent never gets priority to stop him from activating this ability if it's the first thing you want to do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
He instantly gets a guy.
Gets a guy. Blah. So for that mix of versatility and raw power, I think that he could play on either end. Either he's your cheapest card or your most expensive.
Yeah.
I think that's just
I think I've generally seen him index where he's the top of the curve. He's Stormbreath Dragon 5 through 8.
Mm.
Or 5 through 7, whatever the case may be. And it turns out that finishing the game with large flying hasty dragon monsters.
Yeah, medium. I guess that's large. That's your
dead medium plus
5 attacks, where 5 is your dead in 4.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a tipping point
for damage right there. Yeah, just because how multiplication works.
Right.
Because 4 times 5 is 20.
You couldn't see it, but Medibot was doing the more you know hand swoosh.
I like to think that the Skulls cast is a lot like Sesame Street. Except you can't see the Muppets, but there are definitely still Muppets here. and we talk about things that, instead of children are interested in, man-children are interested in.
Yeah, so. I guess that's about the size of it. I guess I will say that in addition to everything else, the way that mythicspoiler.com lays out their cards is kind of wacky, which is kind of why we missed any cards to begin with.
That's how we got. We gotta own this. We left it out.
But I'm also saying that if we're still missing anything, then
we're not covering it. It's not important.
There's way too many cards already. Some of them are planeswalkers, and you should play them. Some of them are powerful removal spells, and you should play them.
Some of them are Sagumaler.
Okay, some of them are unbeatable monsters.
Giant, unsolvable fatty. Gus.
Gus. Maybe Sagumaler is Gus.
What, we can get Gus out of just Sagu, so what's the rest of his name anagram to? Gus, a Mauler.
Gus.
We can workshop that.
Luma, lame. Lame rule our. No, I don't want to. I'll throw that into internet anagram servant, like I always do.
Gus. Maybe just cross out his name and write Gus.
Gus. I'd do that.
I unmorph Gus.
I was an unmorph Gus. I'm sad that he's just a beast and not like a. Jeez, what would he be?
Beast Berserker?
He shouldn't have a class, okay. But...
Plant Beast.
Like Elephant?
No, he looks more like a... He should be a Bear Beast.
I would dig Bear Beast.
Bear Beast, yeah!
That'd be pretty good.
Go along with the Bear Tribal coming in set 2.
I really hope that's not the case. Oh, boy. Well, that's all for Cons of Tarkir.
That is definitely all for Cons of Tarkir.
So I hope you have fun playing with Cons of Tarkir cards, especially Goblin Slide, because I have a secret crush on that card. Shoutouts to Goblin Slide.
I have a secret... What do I have a secret crush on in this set? I don't know. Probably Dead Drop. Just because it's got crocodiles on it. Where's them crocodile?
Give him a swimming lesson.
Diving lessons.
That's the other... Keru Dreadmaw, that's the other crocodile.
That's the other... I want there to be more crocodiles in the next... Hold on, he was what? Down. Yeah, it was Dead Drop.
Yeah, okay.
Diving lessons being my favorite... non-sexual euphemism alongside harmonica lesson as my favorite sexual euphemism.
That's a pretty good one. So next time we'll talk about something else. Yeah, other than magic, probably.
Yeah, we can talk about quadrilaterals.
We can talk about skulls.
Skulls.